Okay, this week's parasha is Parasha Bamidbar, and we'll be combining some parasha together with some Shavuot topic. So let's just read the first pasuk, page 726, Parasha Bamidbar, Parak Aleph, Pasuk Aleph. Vayidaber Hashem el Moshe midbar Sinai ba'ol Moed. Hashem spoke to Moshe in the Sinai desert, in the Ol Moed, in the Mishkan, ve'achad l'chedesh hasheni, on the first of the second month, Bashana Hashenis of the second year, let's say some merits Mitzrayim Leimar of their going out from Egypt saying. So the Medrash on this first phrase, Hashem spoke to Moshe in the Sinai desert, takes this as an opportunity to speak about the fact that the Torah was given in a desert. Why, when the Pasuk is saying Hashem spoke to Moshe in the Sinai desert from the Ol Moed? Why is it important to mention that it was in the Sinai desert? So one of the explanations that are given, that's given by the Medrash, is that Kol mi she'eino oseh atzmo kamidbar hefker, if a person doesn't make himself like a desert, doesn't make himself ownerless like a desert, and eyachal liknas hachokhmah v'torah, that person cannot acquire wisdom and Torah. The fact that the Medrash here is stressing that Hashem spoke to Moshe in the Sinai desert is stressing the symbolism, or the message that a desert has, the fact that Hashem is speaking to Moshe in a desert, the fact that Hashem gave the Torah in a desert. There is a meaning behind the fact that he gave it in a desert, and one of the Midrashim's explanations is also a Gemara that says this, is that if you want to be able to attain success in wisdom and in Torah, you have to make yourself odorless like a desert. What does that mean? So we'll see soon what that means. But now, this is my chance now to go into a Shavuos discussion that will get back to what this Medrash means. So I'm going to ask you to turn back to Parashat Yisroel, Perek Yotes Pasuk Beis, which is on page 400. So the pasuk reads, actually let's start from the beginning, Perek Yotes Pasuk Aleph, Ba'chedesh HaShlishi, in the third month, Letzeis B'nei Yisrael Meretz Mitzrayim, that the Jewish people went out from the land of Egypt, Ba'yom HaZeh, on this day, Ba'u Midbar Sinai, they came to the Sinai desert. Ba'yisu Merefidim, and they traveled from a place called Refidim, which actually the Torah mentions at the end of Parshas V'Shalach, Ba'yavoyu Midbar Sinai, and they came to the Sinai desert, Vayachanu b'midbar, and they encamped in the desert. Vayichan sham Yisrael neged ahar, and Israel encamped there opposite the mountain. So the Hamas Dover from the Netziv asks that, you know, it seems like this whole pasuk is superfluous. It says they traveled from Refidim. We know they traveled from Refidim. If you look at it in the Parashas B'Shalach, that was where they were. They were Refidim. Now they came to Midbar, they came to Sinai. You know, all I have to say is that they came to Sinai. Another question is that if it says in Pasuk Aleph they came to the Sinai Desert, why again does it have to repeat in Pasuk Beis and they came to the Sinai Desert? So the Hamas Dover focuses on the words Vayisim and Refidim, they traveled for Refidim, which again doesn't seem to, we don't need to know this, we know it already. And because of that, because of the fact that these are extra words, the Hamas Dover says that the Mechilta, the Medrash of the Mechilta, is tells us, the Torah is teaching us the following. Ma bi'asa l'midbar Sinai amnas l'kabal Torah. Just like when they came to the Sinai desert, they came there with the intention of receiving the Torah. Kach nisi asa merefidim adas l'kabal Torah. So too, when they traveled from Refidim, was also with the intention of receiving the Torah. So the Torah mentions here, by yisim merefidim, by yavo midbar Sinai, they traveled from Refidim, they came to the Sinai desert, to basically make a comparison between the two. When they came to the Sinai Desert, they knew they were coming to receive the Torah. Not only when they came to the Sinai Desert did they have the intention of receiving the Torah, but already when they left Refidim, they left Refidim already with the intention of receiving the Torah. Okay, so now we have an explanation as to why these words are here, but what's the point? What's the point, says the Netziv, of knowing that already from Refidim, they left with the intention of receiving the Torah? Says the Hamikdavar, Ela mikan yeshlomai, from here we learn. The chadavah shebekdusha, in any matter of holiness, ma'asha adam meichinatz meyaitzer lazeh, the more a person prepares himself and conditions himself for attaining that matter of holiness, chal alav yeitzer hechsher lazeh, actually now that will make him more conditioned and susceptible and worthy of attaining it. Meaning, when we talk about trying to attain any level of Kedusha, there is a certain degree of preparation that comes. It just comes automatically. One has to prepare themselves. One has to condition themselves. And the more you condition, the more you will receive. The more you will be worthy, the more... The word susceptible is not the right word. I can't find a positive word for susceptible. But the more susceptible, the more, or I'll say it like this, the more of a receptacle that you become to be able now to attain more and more levels of Kedusha. You can attain a greater level of Kedusha. One person who invests only a certain amount in conditioning himself will attain that level of sanctity to one degree. The person who invests more, prepares himself more, conditions himself more, will receive a greater degree of the Kedusha.
What determines level?
So therefore, the point of the Medrash, says the Hamad Dover, is to say that the Jewish people understood, and this is a lesson for all generations, that coming to the Sinai Desert with the intention of receiving the Torah means they're in the Sinai Desert. They know that this is where they're receiving the Torah. They know that Har Sinai was where they're going to receive the Torah. Okay, so now they come to the desert. We got to get ready. We got to prepare ourselves. The pasuk is teaching us that they already started the process of preparing themselves already from Refidim, ready from an earlier point. Why? Because the more preparation you invest in something, the more you will take out of it. The more you invest in it, the more you will take out of it. And that's not just in monetary issues, this is in spiritual issues, in Torah issues, in Torah matters. The Jewish people already, they understood, if they already start conditioning themselves and preparing themselves already from Refidim, that will already make them more worthy and more of a receptacle to receive Torah when they get to Sinai. So the reason that the Torah mentions they traveled from Refidim, they came to Sinai, is to say just as when they came to Sinai, they had the intention of receiving the Torah, they began preparing themselves for receiving the Torah. When they already left Refidim, they were doing so. Because they understood the more preparation, the more you invest in getting ready for something, the more you will be able to receive that matter of Kedusha and get it in a greater level. And he brings this out, and he shows this from a very interesting Gemara of Bava Metzia that we've mentioned a number of times. And the Gemara of Bava Metzia says that, I forgot to bring up the Gemara of Bava Metzia.
What kind of preparation?
We'll talk. Okay. We'll talk about that. But right now, the Netziv doesn't say what the preparation was. The Netziv just talks about the idea of preparation.
So they were told to prepare certain ways just prior to don't be what you want.
Well, clearly they didn't start that earlier than that. So it would have to mean it could mean a number of possible things. But let's wait and see. Okay. But again, he doesn't talk about he doesn't say anything specific what the preparation was. Now, it's very possible that that preparation was, once you bring it up, that on some very basic level, it really is about, you know, thinking about it and focusing on it and you know, contemplating what it means to receive the Torah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there could be many different levels of what needs to be done. Clearly, 3 days before, they have to go through an intense purification process. We'll see from Aruch Chaim and other ideas of preparation. But it could be just on a very basic level. The whole idea now that they're going to be taking upon themselves, receiving the Torah, becoming the nation of God, you know, these are things that the more you think about it and contemplate it, the more that itself is a preparation. Okay, so the Netziv brings down the Gemara Bava Metzia that says like this. I believe the Gemara says that on Rav Chiya, that Rav Chiya said that he made sure the Torah was not forgotten from the Jewish people. He says, what did I do? He says, I would plant flax. I would then take the flax after it grows and weave it into nets. I would leave. I would then take the nets and I would trap deer. I would trap the deer, shecht it, give the meat to the poor, take its skins, and work them into parchments. After I worked them into parchments, I would create 5 scrolls. On each scroll, I would write one book of the Chumash, one book of the Torah. I would then go to a city, basically where there is no one to teach the children Torah, and I would gather a total of 11 children. 5 of them, I would give each one a scroll and teach them the scroll, teach them that Chumash, one Chumash. 5 children would each get a Chumash, and each would be taught the Chumash. 6 of the children would be taught the 6 orders of the Mishnah, Shisha Sidra Mishnah, which were by heart, Rashi says. And he said, and after teaching these 11 children, he would then say to them, okay, now you go teach everybody else what you learned. And by doing that, the Gemara says, he made sure that Torah was not forgotten from the Jewish people. Basically, he was going out to where there was no Torah education for these children. He was giving them an education, and this is the means how he did it. Now, the Gemara says that Reb Chiya went out of his way to do all these preparations. He planted the flax, he made the nets, he trapped the deer, he shechted them, he did everything that he needed to do. And the obvious question is, why do you have to go through all that bother? Just go to your local Israel bookshop and, you know, maybe buy a chumash, or at least, you know, buy the scrolls.
Not bad.
Okay. I just looked at, you know, this, so to speak, you know. But basically, you know, it's not like anybody who ever needed a parchment to write on it, that they had to go through the whole process themselves. There are places where you bought it, you should have just bought it and done it. As the Nitziv says, the only part of the process that needs lishma, that needs to be done for the sake of writing a Torah, is the ibud, is when you work out the skins. You have to work them out lishma. That means you've got to work them out for the purpose of using it for a Sefer Torah. But all the stuff before, you don't need to do that. So why do you do it? The answer is because Reb Chiya understood that the more that he puts into the creating of these scrolls, the more conditioning, the more sanctity that he does into putting every step of this preparation, the more sanctity he puts into each thing, now the greater power these chumashim will have to impact the children who are learning from it. So he takes the flax and he plants it for the sake of using it for a Sefer Torah. And he makes the net for that purpose. And he now traps the deer for that purpose. Not only that, he takes the meat and gives it to tzedakah. You know, a little bit on a different track, but again, uses it all for a mitzvah. The fact that each stage he now does it for the sake of writing a Sefer Torah, the more preparation, the more he's investing kedusha in each part of the process. And the more that you put into all the steps leading up to the final process, the more power you now invest in it. And therefore, the whole point was to invest those chumashim, those Sefer Torahs, to give them the stronger power and impact to influence those children, all came because he didn't just put in the preparation only at the halachic point of having to do it for a Sefer Torah. Every stage was done for the purpose of making for a Sefer Torah. And that now infused kedusha sanctity into every stage. And now there was more stages of preparation, more preparation for holiness, more preparation of creating the Sefer Torah's holiness and power. The more that you put into the preparation, the more you invest in the preparation towards your goal, the more now you come out with, the more power you invest in it. And that's what the Jewish people understood for themselves, says the Nitziv. The more preparation that they put in for the sake of receiving the Torah, the more now they made themselves worthy and being a clear receptacle for the Torah and for the sanctity that came with the giving of the Torah.
Do we know when this happened?
What happened?
When the deer, is that a metaphor, or is it really did? The flax from the
air. No reason to think it's a metaphor.
So when did he live?
In the time, he was the time of the Gemara? I don't know exactly.
So like in the 3rd century?
I don't know the years. All I'm saying is that he was I think he was an early Amora.
Uh-huh.
I think so. Okay. So again, the whole point that the Tzibah is trying to bring out is is that the message of what the Torah is trying to say is the message to all of us. Any, the more preparation you invest in attaining a level of Kedusha, the more you now, either for yourself, become worthy, or whatever you're investing that preparation in, the more Kedusha and sanctity goes into that or into yourself. Now, a similar point is brought out in the Sefer called Aksava Kabbalah. And for this, we need to go to Parshas Mishpatim. The end of Parshas Mishpatim also talks about the giving of the Torah. So if you take a look on page 442, and this is Perek Chaf Dalet Pasek Tet Zion, verse 16. So the pasuk says, "By Yishkayin Kved Hashem Al Har Sinai, the glory of Hashem rested on Mount Sinai. By Yechaseihu Anan Sheishes Yamin, and the cloud covered it for 6 days. By Yikra Al Moshe Bayim Hashvi Mitaycha Anan, and he called to Moshe on the 7th day from within the cloud. Umarei Kved Hashem, and the appearance of the glory of Hashem Keish Oichelas, like a flaming or devouring fire." Bereisha at the top of the mountain, Leinei Bnei Yisrael, to the eyes of the Jewish people. I mean, the pasuk is saying that the Jewish people were able to see the glory of Hashem. Right? They had, as we know, the Jewish people had a, what would be the equivalent of a prophetic vision. When they stood at Mount Har Sinai, and they had this revelation of Hashem at Har Sinai, and that's referring to Ma'arei Kved Hashem, the appearance of the glory of Hashem. The Jewish people were able to experience and to see the glory of Hashem, similar to a nevuah, act like a nevuah, whichever way you want to say it. And then the pasuk says Ke'esh Eichelet, like a fire that devours, like a consuming fire. Now the Ksava Kabbalah points out that if the Torah is trying to tell us, trying to describe to us, you know, this glory of Hashem, what did it appear like? Wants to qualify it. Okay, and what's to qualify it that it appeared like a fire? What did the Jewish people see? They saw a fire. And that fire, they understood, was the glory of Hashem. But the pasuk is saying, well, how do you qualify this glory of Hashem? How did it appear to the Jewish people? Like a fire. So says Ksava Kabbalah, if that's what it means, why did it say Ke'esh Eichelet, like a consuming fire? Doesn't fire consume? Why did it have to describe it as a consuming fire? What was it, burning up the mountain and consuming the ground? What was it doing? What was it consuming? So therefore, the Ksava Kabbalah says that the pasuk here is not trying to qualify the glory of Hashem, what it looked like, because he says it's not appropriate to do that. It's not appropriate to take to qualify, to describe anything that relates to Hashem in a physical form. So he says that what Ke'esh Eichelet is coming to teach us is the following. It's teaching us that the Jewish people had a tremendous revelation. They had a revelation greater than any of the prophets. And they did so wide awake. You know, most prophets who prophesize, they basically kind of pass out. And when they're in a state of lack of their senses, because the whole experience is too much for them to handle, they have the experience. But basically, they're not doing it in a regular state of awareness. And the Jewish people had that. They were fully aware. I mean, it does say they passed that also each time they heard the Dibris. But again, there was a point, though, where they experienced the vision.
Rabbi, you said that a shifra saw more at, correct, than in the Yamsuf.
That wasn't at Har Sinai. That was at the Yamsuf.
Oh, yeah.
At the Yamsuf. Okay. See, I'm glad somebody pays attention and remembers what I say.
I remember you said that.
Okay. Now, so the Ksava Kabbalah says that you might think that everyone there, everybody experienced it the same way. Everybody experienced it the same way. They all came to Har Sinai. They left Mitzrayim 50 days till they get to Mount Terah. And the Mount Terah, they had this tremendous revelation, and everybody had the same revelation. Says the Ksava Kabbalah, no, that's not true. Every person's revelation was unique. Everyone had their own individual level of revelation. And that level of revelation was based on how much preparation they put into it before. Because any time a Navi, any time a prophet experienced prophecy, You don't just like, you know, snap your fingers or say a few words and all of a sudden you're a prophet. There's tremendous amount of preparation, of self-perfection, of self-refinement you have to go through to experience the prophecy. The Jewish people have their preparation here. And like Larry said, there was a standard preparation. But again, even within that standard preparation, you know, how you prepared yourself and what you took out of it and what you internalized and what kind of person you made yourself, everybody accomplished that at a different level. And according to the level of how much they prepared themselves to be worthy and to be a receptacle for receiving this revelation of Hashem, that's how they expressed, that's how they experienced it. The Ksava Kabbalah brings down, I mean, we know this, but it's actually a medrash that says, we know that who is the closest at Mount Sinai? Moshe, right? You had Moshe, you had Aaron, you had the elders, you had the rest of the Jewish people, you had Nadav and Avihu, you had the elders, and there's actually a saying of Chazal that says Moshe had his own mechitza, that means Moshe had his own area, and Aaron had his own area. He says what that means is that Moshe was the greatest of the Jewish people. He had refined himself at the highest level. Therefore, he was at the highest level. He could be the one closest to the revelation of Hashem because he had the highest level of refinement, the preparation. Aaron is next. The Levine were next. The Zekana were next. All this was because, and he also brings a medrash, a Yalkut Shemoni, that says that Lefi Koichai Shokol Echad Ve'Echad Hayadibur Medaber Imai. The Dibur, the commandment that the Jewish people heard, it spoke to each one according to each person's kalach, each person's strength. What does that mean, each person's strength? Clearly it means that each one heard it in a different way. What does that mean? That means, says the Ksava Kabbalah, according to how each person has conditioned themselves and prepared themselves for the receiving of the Torah, that is how they heard and experienced each commandment. Because each person's experience was different based on their preparation, on their hachana, on their conditioning. Therefore, that is what it means that the vision, the Umari Hashem, and the revelation of Hashem, ke'esh oichelot, like a consuming fire. Consuming fire means like this. The more combustible something is, the more it burns. Right? So if you put fire to something that's less combustible, it's going to be a smaller fire. If it's more combustible, it's going to be a bigger fire. That's what esh oichelot means. It's like a consuming fire. Just like fire burns according to what it's burning, what's the conditioning for being burned that it is now coming into contact with, that'll make a difference as to how it burns. That is what the vision of Hashem was. The vision of Hashem was according to each person like a burning flame. Each person was experiencing the revelation of Hashem according to how combustible they were, according to how conditioned they were, according to how worthy and how much a receptacle they were for the vision, for the revelation of Hashem. So according to both the Netziv and the Ksava Kabbalah, the Torah is teaching us a very important idea. And that is that there we know that any time it comes to attaining any level of Kedusha, Har Sinai being the first example, the example for all generations, if you're going to experience and grow closer to Hashem, there is a certain amount of investment, of achana, of preparation you have to put into it. And when you have to put in that preparation, the more you prepare, the more preparation you put in, the more you will be a receptacle and conditioned and worthy of receiving a level of Kedusha accordingly. The more you prepare, the more worthy you make yourself, the more you receive. The less is less. Okay. Now, again, the Ksava Kabbalah doesn't talk about what kind of conditioning we're talking about or what kind of preparation. I would say at least from the way that the Ksava Kabbalah is talking, in the sense of the Mare Hashem, the revelation of Hashem, I would assume he's talking about the conditioning for prophecy. Meaning, besides the basics that they have to do is separate from their wives, you know, a prophet has to refine himself. He has to go ahead, he has to separate himself from personal pleasures, he has to be totally focused on Hashem. You know, this was the preparation that they had to do before the receiving of the Torah, and the more they refined themselves, the more they would now experience. I want to share with you now the commentary of the Arachayim. The Arachayim back in Shemos. Now let's turn back to Parashat Yisro, where we were before, where I share with you the Hamak Davar's comment. This was in Parashat Yisro, and this was Perek Yates, Pasuk Aleph. That is page 400. And we need to look at the Pasukim again in order to, you know, appreciate what the Arachayim is about to do.
Well, Orachayim.
Well, it depends. Orachayim was a commentary in Chumash. Orachayim is a section of Shulchan Aruch. Orachayim means a way of life. Yeah. Orachayim means the light of life.
Right, no, I know what they mean.
Two separate things.
But only one is like someone you refer to as a person.
Yes.
Orachayim.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. Okay. So, again, the Orachayim is focusing on Pasuk Beis, and he wants to know, by Yisim and Refidim, they travel from Refidim. We know they travel from Refidim. That's the last place they were at in the end of Parashat B'Shalach. Why does Torah have to say it to us? By Yavon Midbar Sinai, they came to the Sinai Desert. Pasuk Aleph just said they came to the Sinai Desert. Why is it mentioning it again? And then the Pasuk concludes, by Yachanu, by Midbar, and they encamped in the desert. Where else should they camp? You camp where you came. Why does it have to mention, and they camped in the desert? And then it says, that goes together. Vayichat Sham Yisrael Neged Ahar, the Jewish people encamped opposite the mountain. Okay, so a second. Alright, so the first thing. What is the Torah trying to teach us? So says Arachayim, the reason the Pasuk is repeating all this is because the Torah is trying to teach us, and I'll read you the words, Lahasim Shloisha Inyanim. The Torah wants to introduce us to three topics. They are the main forms of preparation for the receiving of the Torah. Meaning, besides for the 3 days that they separated from their wives and kept themselves halachically pure. And perhaps besides the conditioning that they needed, like a Navi, to receive the prophecy, the experience revelation of Hashem. That's my vision. And that says the Arachayim. We also have three main preparations for the receiving of the Torah. Shebem Tzeusim Nisratza Hashem L'Anchilam Nachla Shakahi Tereseinu Ani'ima. That through them HaKadosh Baruch Hu decided and was willing to give to us the beautiful Torah as our heritage. The Arachayim is going to teach us now some more preparation that's necessary, Torah is alluding to. The first, by Yisim Refidim, and Shalom from Refidim. Rashi speaks out, Refidim is where Amalek attacked the Jewish people. And the reason it was called Refidim is because Refidim has the word roughly, which means weak. In Refidim, they weakened themselves from the Torah. And because of that, Amalek attacked. What does weakening yourself from the Torah mean? Says the Arachayim, it means that they were not fully involved, they were not using all their energies for Torah. Ripoy means being lazy. The worst thing you can be when it comes to trying to succeed in Torah, to make yourself worthy of receiving the Torah, is you have to be ready to put your work, you have to work for it. You got to put your energies into it, you got to put work into it, you got to put everything into it. If you're going to be lazy, if you're not going to put your full energy into it, it doesn't work. In order to succeed in Torah, you've got to invest energy and strength. As he says, laziness is the poison by which you're going to lose the ability to attain Torah. And therefore he says that we find in many words, many places in Chazal, when they try to talk about learning, they say they use these very strong terms. A person has to kill themselves over Torah. They use the word esek ha-Torah, involvement in Torah. They're just studying involvement in Torah. Hishtadlus ha-Torah, that's another form that he's using. Again, effort. We call it a malus batera, toil in Torah. In order for a person to be able to attain Torah, a person has to be able to make sure that they put their energies into it. And the less energy they put into it, the less they're going to have from it. That is what's being alluded to in Vayisim and Rephidim. They traveled from Rephidim. Rephidim was a place, Sharafu Yedeim in Atara. That was where their hands were weakened from Tara. They became somewhat lazy. They weren't investing enough energy and effort into Tara. Vayisim and Rephidim, they traveled from Rephidim means they traveled away from that weakness. They traveled away from that laziness. They understood that one of the conditions for receiving the Torah was, you can't be roughly, you can't be weak. You got to be ready to invest the work and the effort and the energy to the fullest. That's the first preparation. The next one, he says, is what's brought down when it says, Vayavo midbar Sinai, Vayachanu b'midbar. And they came to the midbar Sinai and they encamped in the desert. The desert is meant to be a metaphor for humility, for anivus. As he says, Ki ein debrei Torah miskaimin el b'mi shemashpal atzmai umeitzem atzmai kamidbar. The only way for a person to be able to attain greatness in Torah is to lower himself and make himself like a desert. Pirish lashin shiflus v'anava kamidbar shakol dorchin alav. A desert is odorless and people just trample through it as they please. That is meant to be a metaphor for humility. A person who is humble doesn't get worked up when people step on him. Doesn't mean he allows himself to be abused, but he doesn't. But when people step on him, he doesn't make a fuss about it. Why? Because he's not self-centered. He's not focused on himself. So therefore, the second step of preparation for the receiving of the Torah was desert. They came to the desert. They encamped in the desert. That's because desert means to me is a remez, is trying to allude to, you have to be like a desert. You got to make yourself humble, and you have to be like a desert that everybody tramples on, and it doesn't bother you because you make no fuss about yourself. You're humble. You're a humble amount of person. That's the second condition necessary for succeeding in the Torah. A person who is humble is a person who doesn't get caught up in himself, doesn't credit himself, doesn't focus on himself. His entire focus is that he knows that everything that he has comes from Hashem. And that is the kind of person with the refinement that is open to receiving the greatest levels of Torah and the greatest levels of serving Hashem. And that is what the Medrash in our parsha means. When it says, why did Hashem speak to Moshe in Midbar Sinai? Mm-hmm. The answer is, you have to make yourself hefker like a desert. Odorless. Nobody stops you. People just trample and they step all over the desert. No one stops them because it's odorless. That is meant to be a metaphor for humility. And that is the second precondition for receiving the Torah. And the third one falls under, for it says, Vayichan Shem Yisrael Neged Ahar. And is in Yisrael camped there opposite the mountain. At this point, the parsha, the first word was vayachanu. It was in plural form. Now it switches over to singular form. And Rashi brings down, the singular form means to say that the Jewish people now were encamped like one person, with one heart, and with one kisha chavalevacha, like one person with one heart. That is the third condition for being able to be, for succeeding in the Torah. And for this he explains, that, and the way he explains it is, the Ein Gimel Hu, the third precondition is, B'chinas Yir Chachamim B'Yishchavis B'Leib Shalom B'Tamim Vayishu Bad Levad. The fact that sages come together with a full heart and they don't separate into separate groups. El Yisvadu Yachad V'Yachadu Zelazeh. But rather, they come together and they sharpen each other. V'Yazmir Panim Zelazeh. And they explain different ways of understanding to each other. And that is what Vayichan Shem Yisrael, again in singular form, is trying to say. They all became like one. They were all united. There was no divisions amongst them. And therefore now they were ready to receive the Torah. So the third condition of the unity that we need for Torah, the Baruch Haim explains, is referring to the fact, the way he phrases it is, that when scholars, when people are learning Torah, they don't just keep separate, but rather they come like one with a full heart. Meaning, there's no, like, animosity. There's no, like, competition that separates them. There's no jealousy. They are completely and full-heartedly ready to help each other. And when they do that, that is when there is the sharing of ideas of Torah that brings a person success in Torah. For a person to succeed in Torah, they need a friend. They need someone to help them learn. They need someone to point out things that they don't know, that they don't see. And that only really happens on the highest level when there's no animosity. If there's some kind of animosity, then there's going to be some kind of a partition, a wall between them in some level. Once it's full-hearted, everybody is happy with everybody else's success, there's no jealousy, there's no animosity, there's no selfishness, now everybody is open to each other, that is when Torah flourishes. So that is the third precondition. The third precondition for receiving the Torah is the achdus, the unity amongst people, so that there's no barriers between them, because any kind of barrier is going to lessen the ability for them to enhance each other and for Torah to flourish. Now, I just want to share with you comment from Rabbeinu Yoina on Pirkei Avos, which just, I think, adds to this whole idea. And that is that in Pirkei Avos, there is a saying, Kenei Lecha Chaver, acquire for yourself a friend. Rabbeinu Yoina says, there are three things that you need a friend for. You need a friend for learning Torah, as we just said. You need a friend for a constructive criticism. That you will have someone that cares for you, and they care for you in a real way. That they point out things that you need to fix, things that you need to correct yourself, things you need to improve. And when you have two people that are real friends in that, says Rabbeinu Yoina, they do tshuva with each other. They do tshuva together. It's the point to have someone that is out there that means you're good and you're ready to hear what they have to say, and they'll give the constructive criticism, and you'll learn from each other. And you'll have someone that's constantly helping you work on yourself. The third thing you need a friend for, you need a confidant. You need someone that you can speak to, that you could get advice from, you can pour out your heart to, and not be afraid that he's going to tell anybody else about it. You need a confidant. You need an advisor, a confidant. That's the third thing that he mentions. A friend is there to help you with advice, help you to strengthen you, and you know you can trust him that he's not going to go telling other people about it. These are the three things you need for a friend. Not just for hanging out, not just having a good time, right? For three very important purposes. It's very clear from the way that Rabbeinu Yoina tells us what a friend is about, that if you really want to have a friend and you want to have the benefits from a friend, you've got to have a love between each other. There has to be a complete and open friendship and unity between the two of you. If there's any kind of animosity, any kind of jealousy, any kind of separation, you're just not going to be able to get all these things. You're not going to be able to have the full benefits of these three things. And that's what Rabbeinu Yoina says. The precondition of unity for the purpose of receiving the Torah is because together we grow. We can't grow on our own. We grow together with each other. And we grow together with each other when there is no barrier. When there are no barriers, there's no jealousy, there's no selfishness, we're united, our hearts are united. Now we're together in a way that we can benefit each other and support each other and help each other in the fullest way, and that is where true success in Torah comes from. So now we have the Aruch Chaim's formula for preparing for receiving the Torah. His formula was, again, there's what the Torah mentioned the 3 days before. I would add, they have to prepare themselves for the prophecy, for the experience of a prophecy. And says Aruch Chaim, they had other preparations that were necessary, and those preparations were the preparations of making sure that what was the first one again? Not to be lazy. The second one is to be modest, to be humble, and the third is to have unity. And as the other Mepharshim told us, the more you prepare, the more you work on that in yourself, the more you condition yourself to be these ways, the more you will now receive the Torah. And that is what Hashem wants from the Jewish people before. He wanted them to prepare themselves in all these ways. And the more they prepared, the more they became worthy, the more they would experience and receive the Torah at a greater level. Okay. Let's now go back to something that's, about Parsha. And as we know, the Parsha has a census, a counting of the Jewish people, and it also has the Jewish people being divided within camps, right? There were four camps. Each camp had its own flag. We know from the Drashim that each tribe had its own flag. And with the Torah, when Hashem commands Moshe to count the Jewish people, so Hashem says, Su'u es reish b'nei Yisrael. That's Pasuk Beis. Perkah Pasuk Beis, page 726. Pasuk Beis. Su'u es reish k'ladas b'nei Yisrael. That means count each head of the Jewish people. But it's very interesting, the wording is Su'u, which is, again, the word used for counting. But what does the word Su'u also mean?
Lift.
To lift. To lift. So the question is, why is that word used? Now, before we get to that, I think it's very worthwhile to go through the Ramban. The Ramban, after, when the Torah describes the total number, the total census of the Jewish people, he then says, he asks the question, what was the purpose of counting them? What was the point? So the first thing that he says was, that perhaps the purpose of being, he understands, he says, if you want to go ahead and divide them up into camps.
Ooh, the Ramban says?
The Ramban.
Oh.
Okay. He says, right, I'm sorry. We know that they had to also prove which tribe they belong to, which that's understood because if we're being divided up into camps, into flags, okay, each flag was based on per tribe, you have to prove what tribe you came from. Fine, can understand why you want that. But what's the purpose of the number? Why do we need to know the number? So the first thing he says is, perhaps we'll say, that the purpose of the number was actually to show the Jewish people a great miracle, which he says is that you came to Egypt with 70, right? You're about 200 years later, and now you're 603,550 men, 20 to 60. That's only the men from that age group. And the number they usually give is about 3 million, right? So then 200 years, it went from 70 to 3 million. That is a lot of reproduction. And that, it says the Ramban, is what Hashem is trying to show the Jewish people. Look at, let me see if I can find the wording, how he says it. The purpose was to show Hashem's kindness. They came down 70 people, and now they're like the sand of the sea. There's a tremendous amount of them in such a short period of time to grow to such great number, is that that's kindness from Hashem. So he says perhaps the whole point of counting was to bring this out to them. They should realize, right? They should realize that Hashem has been very kind by them, by blessing them with this kind of becoming such great numbers. Then he says another explanation. Then he says, V'oid, another thing. Ki abonath may avanaviyim. One who comes to stand before the greatest of the prophets, the Achiv Kadesh Hashem, and his brother known as the Holy One of Hashem, v'hu neida aleihem b'shmoi, and he now lets them know his name, yeloi b'davar hazeh zchus v'chayim. This will be a merit for life. Ki ba b'seid ha'am v'ksav b'nei Yisrael zchus rabbi misparam. Okay. My way of understanding the Ramban is, number one, just by being counted, and being counted as part of Klal Yisrael, they have now entered being part of a nation, the Zchus HaRabim Misparam. And now they have the merit of the many. The more people that come together, there's a merit, there's a special merit to the Rabim. A community, a congregation has greater merit than an individual. And now by being counted as part of the whole nation, that itself brings merit to them as being part of this great nation. But then he says, another thing is, V'chein l'chulam z'chus, v'mispar ashim l'fnei Moshe v'Aaron. Also they have a merit by being counted before Moshe and Aaron. Ki yasimu aleihem einam l'toiva. Because when Aaron and Moshe see them, and they hear their name, and they have like a connection with them, they will now look on them favorably. Yivakshu aleihem rachamim. And they'll pray for mercy for them. Hashem Elokeinu v'yaseichem yaseif aleichem kachem elof pa'amim. They'll give them a bracha that Hashem your God shall add to you 1,000 times more. V'lo yamit misparchem, and your number should not be decreased. V'ashkolem kaifal napshaseichem, the shkolem should be an atonement for your soul. Each person comes before Moshe and Aaron to be counted means that now they make a connection with Moshe and Aaron, And Moshe and Aaron look at them in a positive way, and they daven for them. So being counted, right, now being counted becomes the means of being able to come, each person has a chance to come before Moshe and Aaron and to get a bracha. Meaning, number one, they will be counted as part of the Jewish people, that itself is a merit. And at the same time, by having each one being counted individually, coming individually for Moshe and Aaron, that now itself, that connection with Moshe and Aaron, now is a merit for that individual, because they connect, Moshe and Aaron see the person, they see his name, they connect with him, and they look positively on them, which means they give them a bracha, they daven for them. So again, another reason for the counting is, again, it's not about knowing a number for the sake of knowing a number. Well, according to the first explanation, right, according to the first explanation, the number is, see the kindness of Hashem. According to the second explanation, not really much talk about numbers as much as what counting does. Counting brings them together within Klal Yisrael, within the Jewish nation as a whole, which is a merit to be part of that body, and it gives each one a chance to come before Moshe and Aaron and to be blessed by them. Then the Ramban says a third explanation. The third explanation is...
He gave each a dollar.
It doesn't say that. The third explanation that the Ramban gives is that the counting was because they were about to enter Eretz Yisrael and fight a war. Before you fight a war, you take a census to know how many soldiers you have, how many people you have. So the third explanation seems to be like the most basic explanation, and he doesn't even say it the first one. That's the third one. That the whole point of his counting was for the purpose of knowing how many soldiers there were and preparing the armies that were to enter Eretz Yisrael. Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky says the following. Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky explains, makes the following comment. As I said, it starts off, the way of saying that that talk about counting is se'u, uplift, to lift up. Now we know that if we think back to Bereishis, and we talk about when Yosef was in the jail with the Sarah Mashma and Sarah Oifen, and they tell Yosef their dream, and Yosef also says to them, Yisa Hashem Para Es Roshcha, Para will lift up your head. For the Sara Oifim, lifting up your head means he's going to recognize you. For the Sara Oifim, it means your head's coming off. So the expression Suras Rosh, comparing it to a similar expression over there, can have a positive connotation. It can have a connotation of being uplifted. It can have a connotation of losing your head. Says Rabbi Yaakov, Klal Yisrael, when they were being counted, had two ways of looking of what the point here of being counted was. They could look at it as they are being formed into armies, right? They could look at it like that. Or they could look at it following the other reasons the Ramban gave, that it's there for their merit, for a merit for life. The fact they were divided up in camps, the Ramban says later, was to be similar to the way the angels are in Shemayim. Hashem has four angels called Chayas that surround his throne, okay? And corresponding to that, you have the flags going around the Mishkan. That means that the encampment of the Jewish people and the way they were divided up and everything was for an uplifting experience. It was, number one, to make them like the angels, at least in their encamping. And counting them, the Ramban says, had other reasons, to show Hashem's kindness, to give them bracha. And the Ramban, actually, I skipped this. The Ramban brings down a medrash that when Hashem told Moshe to count them, so Amalai Kadosh Baruch Hu, the Menaisim B'Chavad B'Gedula, count them with respect and with greatness. Don't just ask the head of the tribe or the head of the family, you know, make a count and hand me the total. Each individual has to be counted. Each one. Each one should come before you, Be'ema, U'Be'ima, they should come with reverence and awe and respect, and you should count each one. And the Gemara and the Medrash describes that as that's counting them in a way of respect and greatness. The whole process happening here could have been seen as something that's meant to lift them up, or it could be seen as we're getting an army together. And depending on how they perceive what they were doing, that was going to make a difference to how they perceived who they were. If they're an army, then they get scared that they won't be a strong enough army to be able to battle their enemies. If they don't see it primarily as an army, but they see it as something meant to lift them up, and they don't lose their faith in Hashem. So that's why, says Rabbi Yankiv, that is why the wording was Suas Reish, lift up the head. Compared to what happened by Yosef. This counting was either going to lift them up, or was going to elevate them, or was going to kill them. Because depending on how they focus, depending on how they perceive what's happening to them, that'll make a difference in how they perceive themselves and the difference for the future.